This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Kia ora, welcome to the Kiwi Birth Tales podcast and thanks for tuning in this week. I'm your host Jordan, I'm a mum of one, soon to be two boys and a lover of all things birth and a very passionate storyteller. The goal of Kiwi Birth Tales is to empower, inform, educate and connect families from New Zealand and all over the world, talking about the things that are so often kept to ourselves or shared with only our nearest and dearest because of this taboo that seems to surround sharing stories about birth. All stories deserve to be heard, no story more important than the other, and with this podcast you'll get a variety without bias. The podcast is not intended for medical advice. I'm not an advocate for any particular mode of birth or birth care, and this platform is simply here to share these beautiful, empowering Kiwi Birth Tales with you all. So I hope you enjoy. In today's episode of Kiwi Birth Tales, I speak with Jess, and Jess takes us through her two pregnancy and birth stories with her son Harry and her daughter Holly. Jess talks us through two pretty different experiences, so they were pretty much polar opposites in terms of birth and postpartum. Jess had pretty similar pregnancies with both children, but yeah, the first time around definitely could have gone better, and I'll let her do a better job than me of talking through that, but definitely things happened that shouldn't have, and Jess wasn't treated the way that she should have been during her birth and postpartum period, and that impacted how she was feeling and her mental health, and yeah, had a big impact on her fourth trimester journey. And she ended up falling pregnant with Holly only 4 months after Harry was born, so quite quickly, and that was a conscious decision between Jess and Drew, her husband. So she talks us through that small age gap and what it was like being pregnant when she had, you know, another small baby to look after, and then a really healing and positive second birth experience where she felt listened to and like she was making informed choices. And it's just really nice to hear the difference between Jess's two stories, because like I think she says at the end of the episode, things were really different for her the second time around, and she just felt listened to, and her first birth didn't inform her second in terms of assuming it would again be a bit of a traumatic experience. So I just think it's really lovely to hear Jess talk about the two different births and postpartum periods, and I'm super grateful that she was willing to share with us. So I will let Jess do the talking now and we can jump into it. Hi Jess, thanks so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
No worries. Would you like to tell the listeners a little bit about you and who is in your family?
Sure, so I'm Jess Ehrlich. I'm from Christchurch. I'm a mum to two little ones, Harry and Holly, who are 2 and 3. I'm also a writer and an author, and I share a lot of my pieces on my Instagram page and website. But I also have two poetry books and most recently a children's book on emotions called The Rainbow in My Heart.
Yeah, awesome. Very cool. I'm a huge fan of your work. Often when I'm having a bit of a shitty day, I'll go and find one of your posts and I'm like, oh, I feel so like seen by you. So yeah, for sure. Big fan.
Thank you. Thanks.
No worries. Awesome. So we're going to have a bit of a chat about your pregnancy and birth and sort of postpartum journeys today. So do you want to talk us through what the journey to pregnancy was like for you with Harry?
Yeah, sure. So like mentally it was a long journey before it even got to that point. Yeah. Because I actually never considered myself overly maternal. Like obviously I cared for other people's children and all of that, of course, but like the second someone brought a baby into the office, I never sort of jumped up like all the others. I don't really know why. Like I did love babies, but I didn't really fancy one myself. I sort of felt like nervous holding them or like I was doing something wrong. So it just didn't really feel that natural to me. So yeah, I told Drew when we met that I sort of, well, not right when we met, but I sort of mentioned that I hadn't decided honestly if I wanted kids. But then as our relationship evolved, I changed my mind. And, you know, now here I am writing poetry about how much I love them. But, yeah, fortunately we got pregnant really quickly. And we were so, so excited when we found out. Went through lots of sticks as well just to make sure that the lights were getting darker and darker. I just almost couldn't believe that it was true, because the concept, even now, it still eludes me that, like, we actually grow a human. Mm. It's your body knows what it's doing and you don't need to know what it's doing. So, I was just amazed.
Yeah, awesome. And did you have many early symptoms in that first trimester? Did you notice that you were pregnant sort of once you found out you had a positive test, or, what was your first trimester like?
I didn't actually have any symptoms other than fatigue and sore breasts.
Yeah.
So it was quite easy keeping it a secret at work, because there was no morning sickness, though I wanted to tell everyone. Mm. But, yeah, it sort of felt like weird walking around in public, like I sort of had my own little secret. And it was cool because, like, it was ours, but I also really wanted to celebrate it, and I really wanted that bump. So it was kind of like proof to myself that it was real.
Yeah, cool. And did you choose to go with a midwife for your care, or what did you decide there?
Yeah, I did go with a midwife. And she was really good in the beginning, but I sort of felt like throughout we didn't really gel. Mm-hmm. I think like one of the most important things is if it doesn't feel right for you, you should make that switch.
Yeah.
And I think I probably should have done that myself, but I didn't.
Yeah.
Cool.
And what was the rest of your pregnancy experience like? So did you have any other sort of symptoms that popped up along the way? And did you do the standard testing that's offered in New Zealand? Did you find out the sex?
My pregnancy experience after the first trimester was really great. There were no complications.
Yeah.
I did have pretty bad ligament pain in my hips and some pretty chronic heartburn. I remember drinking Gaviscon from the bottle at my desk at work.
Oh my God, same.
It was so bad.
Yeah.
And I used to sort of spring out of bed quite a lot with some really awful leg cramps, which would freak Drew out because he thought I'd be going into labor. And I'd, you know, pack all the pillows around me and make this huge fort. I don't know why I didn't just buy a pregnancy pillow, but I didn't. I had like 100 pillows, so I was like, I can do this, I can make it work. I miss sleeping on my tummy so much. But I had a really easy pregnancy, actually. So definitely can't complain about anything with that.
Yeah, awesome. And did you do the testing, like the 12 and 20-week scans and stuff like that?
Yeah, so we had I actually had an 8-week scan. I had to have more scans than usual because I had irregular cells on my cervix. Okay. So I had a Letts procedure, and then I think it's a bit of a blur to me, to be honest, but the cells came back as irregular when they had come back as completely normal. So that was like a really big, gutting. So I had quite a lot of internal scans. A lot more scans than usual. But with each scan, everything was looking really good.
Yeah.
Baby was healthy. We found out at the 20 week scan, I think it was, that he was a boy.
Yeah.
They just told us in the room. It was nothing overly special, but we were like, yay.
Yeah.
I'm just going to skip forward though about the irregular cells. It was actually pregnancy that cleared that right up for me. So that was, it all ended up being good news.
Yeah, cool. Awesome. And did you do any like antenatal classes or birth education before or in preparation for your labour and birth?
Yep. We did some antenatal classes, and I'm really glad that I did, actually, because I ended up meeting a couple that my husband and I are really great friends with.
Cool.
And she ended up birthing her baby right next to me in the same, in the room next to me.
Yeah.
Quite cool. Yeah. But the one thing that I did find about antenatal is that while parts of it definitely serve a purpose, I knew nothing much other than some books that I had read, and I didn't know how to change a nappy, and there were definitely parts about it that I was like, oh gosh, I'm so, so glad I went to these classes. But I sort of wish that they'd talked a little bit more about the effects on women who are unable to breastfeed, or there's probably another side to antenatal that I feel like they should cover.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. And did you have many thoughts on like a birth plan, or ideally how you thought your birth might go?
Not really. I had a sort of a loose birth plan. I wanted to birth in the hospital because I was a bit nervous, I guess, with being a first birth and everything. And, you know, I really wanted to trust my body and lean into that side of knowing what I was capable of and listening to what my body was telling me. But again, like, it was my first time, so I just didn't know what to expect. So I did want to be in a birthing pool. But we were sort of like, well, let's just roll with what happens on the day and just see what happens. So I was very kind of like, let's just go with it.
Awesome. Cool. And what about preparation for birth? So I know there's lots of stuff that we talk about now, like antenatal expressing and perineal massage and drinking all the different types of teas and all that sort of stuff. So did you do any of that in preparation for your birth with Harry?
Yeah, towards the end, I did have some of that raspberry leaf tea, I think it's called. I don't know if that actually did anything. But yeah, I had like a Swiss ball, made a wee playlist,
nice.
Had the massage oil, you know, thinking all of these things would happen. Packed, you know, my hospital bag probably 4 months in advance, which I think I downloaded from some mummy blogger on Instagram. That's, I mean, probably just all the usual things. I think I did get a stretch and sweep as well. It was with my first, and in hindsight, I probably didn't need to have it done. I was only 2 or 3 days over, but my hips were just killing me at that point. It wasn't a nice experience though. So yeah, I probably didn't need to get that done.
And did you end up going into labor spontaneously? And when your labor started, how far along were you? What was the start of your labor like?
So I was about 3 or 4 days over. I can't remember exactly when it happened. And I just remember some sort of niggling pains in my lower abdomen, but it wasn't too bad at the beginning. And I sort of mentioned to Drew that I wasn't even sure if it was labor or not, but we started to time the pains and they were just all over the place. And I remember my midwife sort of drawing like some kind of graph explaining to me that if they weren't regular, to wait until they were and however far apart they were supposed to be. And like now I can't even remember. And even at the time I couldn't remember. So I was like, oh, like, what do I do? Do we call it? And I think it was probably at about 9 p.m. We were just sort of parked up on the couch. Things started to get a little bit more intense and the contractions were definitely closer. So Mum came over. Because I really wanted her there as well and to support Drew. And I just sort of sat there breathing through it. Drew was rubbing my back. And, I remember him calling the midwife not too long after that, explaining that it had become really painful. But it actually wasn't my midwife. She was away on holiday, so it was her on-call who I'd never met before. We ended up going to hospital. I was able to walk in at that stage, but I was sort of having to lean through the contractions. And, yeah, the next part's like a bit of a blur to me, but I'll tell it the best that I can.
Yeah.
We loaded up the car and Drew drove me to the hospital. And I remember putting a towel like on the front seat in case my waters broke.
Yeah.
And sort of when we got there, I kind of felt like, I really felt like a bit of an inconvenience with the midwife that was there. I know that sounds awful, but she didn't really have a huge bedside manner. So this was her on call. And I just didn't feel like I was in a very good place. And she examined me. She told me that I was about 4 to 5 centimeters. And I tried to explain to her that like I was in a world of pain. And she told me it was because my baby was posterior. And that was the first I'd actually heard. Like I didn't even know that he was. And she said, look, you could be experiencing these types of contractions for 2 days and that I should just go home. And that shattered me because I mean, I know a lot of people want to wait at home for as long as possible, but for me, and the pain that I was in at that point, I just really wanted to be there. I guess I, like my body was saying, like, it's going to happen soon, but she was saying, no, look, it could be two more days. So she gave me 2 Panadol and 2 codeine and just said, look, give me a call at 7 in the morning. So we went back home and I remember saying to Drew, like, I just don't want to go home. But, you know, we didn't know what to do, so we just did. And when I got home, I just got into the shower and I felt the water was really good on my lower back. And I kind of just hopped from the shower to the bath, even to the toilet. I just found myself just sitting on the toilet a lot. It just felt like the place to be. But yeah, I couldn't get any rest or anything. Drew was absolutely shattered, so he closed his eyes for a moment, and then Mum was there just helping me breathe through. And I don't remember the time exactly, but it might have been about 5 a.m. It was still dark. And I said to Drew, like, we have to go back. Like, we have to go back right now. And he tried getting in touch with the midwife and she didn't pick up the phone. And they were kind of like, Mum and Drew were sort of like, oh, you know, she did sort of mention we should wait till 7. And I'm like, I don't care. Like, I can't tell my baby to wait till 7. Like, we've got to go. And the drive was really uncomfortable. It wasn't a long drive, thankfully. But I just remember Drew stopping at an orange light, and I remember being in the front seat, like, basically wailing while some party goers were in the car, like, next to us, and it was just so weird. I just, I could barely catch my breath. So yeah, and then we got there and I was taken up to the birthing ward, and
yeah. And so what sort of happened from there? Do you want to take us through, I guess, the rest of your labor and then into your birth story?
Yeah, sure. Okay, so we still couldn't, well, I wasn't getting on the phone, but my husband still couldn't get in touch with the midwife. And the hospital midwives were a little bit funny over me being there without her. I kind of just remember feeling that sort of tension, like it wasn't quite normal that she wasn't there. And I remember telling them that I felt like I was going to have this baby soon. And the hospital midwife actually said to me, look, don't bring your things up yet, because if you were in active labor, you'd be crawling around the ground reaching for the gas. And
Jess, I feel so frustrated already by this.
It's really hard for me to talk about this. Like, I'm trying to do it with like a smile, but it's
no, it's not the reality, right?
No. Yep. And it is really hard to talk about, because it really shaped my fourth trimester, but I'll get into that. And it, like, in that moment, I just thought, should I do that? Should I drop to the ground and try and reach the gas? Like, what are you, you know? And anyway, then I started vomiting, and she then said, right, okay, we should probably give you an examination. And it gets a little bit worse. So as she was examining me, her words were, wow, okay, this is either really good or really bad. And panic just, like, washed over me, because I thought, what does that mean? Like, what could the bad thing be? Is my baby okay? Like, that's all I cared about. Is my baby okay? And I still didn't know what she was talking about. She just walked out and got someone else to come in and examine me. And the other midwife said, okay, you're 9 centimeters. You're almost ready to push. And, like, I couldn't believe that I'd gotten to that point, you know, without any pain relief or anything. Like, I was like, oh, well, you know, I've actually managed okay with a posterior baby. So happy that it wasn't a bad thing. But also, my midwife got there, I think, about 20 minutes after that. And the first thing she said when she walked in was, why did no one contact me first? And we were like, well, you know, we tried. So just the whole tone of everything, I was panicked. I just didn't feel, I didn't feel very welcome there. Just like an inconvenience, Anyway, I was having the gas at this stage, lots of cool flannels on my forehead, courtesy of Mum and Drew, who were amazing. But as I progressed, my waters didn't break and I felt this urge to push, so they broke my waters for me. But as I got to 10 centimetres, like in that sort of transition phase, as I was pushing, his heart rate dropped significantly and mine skyrocketed. And I just became delirious at that stage. They'd taken the gas off me because I wasn't pushing properly. He had the cord wrapped around his neck a few times. And all I sort of really remember is my husband and mum both looking really worried because the crash team appeared and it just all of a sudden felt like there were 12 people in the room. And I just kept asking, is he okay? What's happening? And I remember my midwife pretty much being pushed out of the way. And I don't actually know who it was. I'm assuming a specialist said he needs to come out right now. And I kept pushing with their guidance because I was absolutely exhausted at this stage. And they used a suction cup. And I vividly remember one midwife was holding the other who was pulling. And the cup actually popped off. And I just kept thinking, oh, my God, this must be so intense on his little head. But they were amazing. They did what they had to do in those moments, and I do believe that. And I had one nurse, a different nurse, up at my face telling me that I was doing an amazing job and that I could do this, and I really needed that. But out he came, and honestly, the relief was just overwhelming. He was about 8.5 pounds, I think, and as soon as I heard those cries, yeah, I just melted, and I just kept thinking, thank God he's okay.
Yeah, and did they pop him straight up onto your chest when he was out?
Yeah. So we got to have that skin to skin, which was really amazing. And he was perfectly healthy. He was perfectly healthy, and that just meant everything to me.
Yeah. And what happened from there? Did you need any stitches, or did they check you over? And yeah, what was the next little while like?
Yeah, I did need some stitches, but it was just mostly for grazing. So it was like physically, I was actually okay. Mentally, not so much, but physically, I was fine and I actually felt fine. So that was really good. And we were out of there within hours.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, real quick, actually. I think I was there for 3 more hours and then we ended up going to another hospital for 3 days. And the nurses and midwives, they were amazing there. But on day 2, my nipples were really bruised from trying to breastfeed. And they were just cracking and bleeding already, and I was in a lot of pain from feeding. So unfortunately, after seeing like countless lactation consultants, and even with all of the support in the hospital, we just couldn't make it work. And they kept saying to me, I don't understand it, because the latch, it looks perfect, but it didn't feel perfect to me.
Right.
I just couldn't feed without wanting to scream and curl my toes. Yeah. It was not a nice experience for me, unfortunately. Yeah.
Yeah. And so you went to this other hospital. Was it for 3 days, did you say?
Yeah, 3 days. Yeah.
And how did you find, I guess, the initial processing of your whole birth experience? Like, obviously quite a I'm not sure if I should use the word traumatic, but you know, that you didn't have a nice experience in terms of the way that you felt there, and I guess quite a rush to get him out. So did you process that over the next couple of days, or do you feel like it didn't happen until a little bit later in your postpartum journey?
Oh, it was definitely much later. Yeah. I think you do sort of in a way try and process it, because I was having flashbacks but it's hard to really make sense or think about anything, I think. You're just sort of still in shock and disbelief that you're a mother trying to, you know, just rest and learn how to feed. And, you know, there's really not much space for anything else in those early days. So I didn't really get to process anything, to be fair. Yeah, and it definitely caught up to me a lot later on.
And so after those 3 days in hospital, how did you find going home, and what were those first couple of weeks like? I know it's just such a life-changing experience going home with your newborn baby that you have obviously never had previously. So how did you find navigating those next couple of weeks?
I experienced some pretty heavy baby blues.
Yeah.
I was so happy to get him home. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, it was a love bubble. I was absolutely infatuated with him. But, I definitely had those baby blues. And I remember mum telling me that she had those with me. She was pretty honest about her journey. But I had no idea what to expect. And I sort of felt quite lonely, even though I was in a lot of company. I honestly think I felt like I had failed in many ways, because I think, like, my confidence was honestly so knocked that I sort of felt like someone, I know it sounds weird, But I almost believed someone was going to would be able to do a better job looking after him than I could. And, you know, obviously I was so wrong, but I just think the experience that I went through with the birth, yeah, it really knocked my confidence at the beginning of the journey.
Yeah. And did you talk, like, I know you have, well, typically you'd have about 6 weeks of postnatal care with your midwife, and I know she wasn't the midwife at your birth in terms of the one you'd been working with during your pregnancy, but did you discuss at all your birth in those postnatal visits?
Yeah, I did. And I can't even really remember. I mean, I can't even remember saying anything about how, because I didn't know if I should be disappointed about anything. And I didn't say, oh, I wish someone had listened to me, or I wish I hadn't been sent home. I didn't say anything like that because I didn't see how it would help. I guess I was just thankful that he was okay, even though I was still a bit annoyed that I guess my voice had been silenced and the language used was so bad. But I didn't say anything. And I do remember my actual midwife, I was still trying to breastfeed. I persevered for a very long time, but it was just, yeah, it was really, really tough. And she said to me, like, I don't want to make it all sound so doom and gloom, but I'll never forget, she said, when I leave, you're going to cry, aren't you? And it was like, and I was on the verge of tears, but it was just, I just wanted someone to be there, be like, I see you, I hear, not like treat me like I was one of the thousands of people that she saw every day and it was just another birth. Like, this is a massive, massive thing. And you go into it thinking it's going to be maybe a certain way, or that you're definitely going to breastfeed, or you're going to birth this way. And I think we all know that there are going to be variables, but there is a type of mourning that comes with not being able to do something that you had your heart on, you know? Yeah. And I think that's completely normal. And I know a lot of us experience that. And I just really wanted some type of bedside manner there, I guess, from her. And I just, I didn't get that. So I was really, I wasn't sad when our visits ended.
And I guess, like, skipping a little bit, but did you have the sort of social media community at that stage? Like, did you have anyone else that you were able to talk to? I know you have obviously Drew and your mum, but did you have anyone that you felt like you could turn to and say, hey, this is what's happened to me, and I just, like, it doesn't sit right with me, and I feel lost and lonely? Did you have anyone that you were able to have those conversations with?
There were a couple of people, I guess through antenatal, but not really. We hadn't become super close, and not at that stage. But I remember kind of like going to like mum groups and stuff, and no one really felt comfortable sort of putting up their hand saying feeding's hard, this is hard. Everyone was just like, oh, everything's great, everything's great. And look, maybe it was. For me, things were both, and I didn't want to admit that I was finding it really hard because no one else had. So not really. I was the first of my friends to have a baby. So, yeah, I didn't really have that many people at the time, and I didn't have a social media account then, not one I have now. And I actually ended up just messaging just random people off my Facebook, like, who I knew who had had kids, to be like, hey, so, you know, like all those years ago, how was the breastfeeding? Because I just, and it would have seemed so strange, but I just needed to know that I wasn't the only one who couldn't.
I think I just find that so interesting because, like, I sort of had a similar experience in terms of breastfeeding, and it was a godsend having those, you know, people on social media that have become like a little community to me that I could talk to about it. And I just so desperately feel like I wanted something like that. I wanted there to be that for you in this story too, because I just think it's so, so valuable to have. Just to hear someone else talk about it, so you don't feel like you're the only one in the world that this happens to.
Oh, absolutely. And that's one of the reasons why I write some of the things that I do. And I'm so grateful that it can make so many feel seen, because that's what I needed in those early days. And I remember once at a mum's group a little bit further down the track, I'd drawn the line in the breastfeeding, our bond really started to improve. But like I wept, like when he took his first bottle, I just cried and cried. It was so hard. It was like guilt and relief and, you know, all the hormones, all the feels. And anyway, I was at this mum's sort of fitness group. And I'm not really into fitness, but I thought, you know, I'll give it a go. And we're all sitting in the circle and everyone was sort of breastfeeding. And then one mum pulled out a bottle and immediately I sort of felt better. And so I pulled out my formula dispenser and then she made the comment to someone, oh, don't worry, it's breast milk. And I just wanted the ground to just open up and swallow me, because while I was pumping, like my milk was getting less and less. So I had formula there and I just thought, oh my God, like why do we say these things? Because people that are formula feeding, you just feel like a bag of shit.
And there are so many people that freaking formula feed, and it's not because they can't, like for a lot of people, it's not only because they can't breastfeed, it might be because it feels like the right choice for them.
Exactly. Yeah. And I just think, you know what decision is best for you and your baby. Yeah. I mean, for me, I did want to breastfeed and I couldn't. Yeah. And but what I do know is that my mental health just had to come first. Yeah. And I finally put that first, but the comments and the judgment and other things that came after just kept sort of knocking me back. So it would sort of be like two steps forward, one step back kind of thing. So it was definitely a journey for me.
Yeah.
Trying to process the breastfeeding journey, which I never thought I'd even care about, honestly. Like I never thought I would care so much about something like that, but I did.
And how long did you persevere for before you decided to make the switch to formula?
Well, he was 2 weeks when he had his first bottle of formula, but I sort of kept trying. I was doing a combination of everything. It's like a trifecta of everything. And then I had the cabbage leaves and then the gels and then the shields and just ointments, everything. But I think it was probably maybe at week 8 or 9 where I just said, no, I can't keep pumping.
Yeah.
And that's when he was exclusively on formula. Yeah.
And I know you just mentioned a little comment before that you felt like your bond really changed then. Do you want to talk us through, I guess, what that shift was like for you mentally in terms of like bonding with him and just how you were feeling overall once you got past the initial sort of mourning of not breastfeeding anymore?
It improved so much for me. Like my anxiety decreased and things were less tense with my husband and I, because every time, like, I mean, he was an amazing support, but every time I was trying to get Harry to latch, Drew was, you know, he's always over my shoulder trying to help me, and I just wanted to bite his head off because of the pain I was in. And everything started to improve. You know, when he would wake, I wasn't cringing. And I was enjoying him, and I feel like motherhood really started to take shape for me after that. So 100% was the right choice for us. For anyone listening, please don't feel guilty. You have to do what's right for you.
Yeah, for sure. Awesome. And do you want to talk through, I guess, just before we start on Holly's story, how or when did you start to sort of think about processing your birth a little bit more, and what sort of feelings and I guess what sort of mindset and all of that were associated with processing that?
Well, I started to experience a bit of postpartum anxiety pretty early on, and I do, like, a lot of that was around the breastfeeding, but it was also around the birth and I guess just a combination of everything, you know, becoming a new mum and I've always worried quite a lot. So anyway, I was experiencing that, and I battled with that for a while, and finally I sort of opened up to Drew and just said, look, I just don't feel very good. Like, I'm worrying all the time. I'm having these irrational thoughts. Like, I'm always worried about the safety of my baby. I'm worried about other people. Like, I'm worried about people breaking into the house. I mean, it was ridiculous. Yeah. I was constantly worried, and you know, he was completely safe, but I didn't even really like other people holding him. Like, it was just, I kind of felt like a bit of a prisoner in the home. So anyway, and that's just not me at all. And so I spoke to Drew and my mum, and they were like, yeah, I think you really need to talk to someone and just unpack all of this. And so I did. I spoke to a counsellor, and that really helped. Like, I didn't see them for long, but it did help. I talked about my birth and just everything. And it was the first time I sort of felt like I had been listened to from start to end in a really long time. And yeah, that really helped. And she gave me some tools on how to sort of manage the intrusive thoughts. And yeah. It was basically just, you know, recognizing and acknowledging the thought, but, you know, also realizing that it was irrational and just allowing it to pass and thinking about something else, anything else. And that really helped me.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Cool. And so what's the age gap between Harry and Holly?
1 year.
1 year. Pretty close together, right?
considering how tough the fourth trimester was for me, it sounds pretty crazy. But yeah, we were pregnant again when he was 4 months old.
Yeah. And so how did you find out that you were pregnant? Had you got your periods back by then?
Yes, I did. Yeah. And I can't remember when, but yeah, no, I did. And we made the decision that we kind of wanted to have them really close in age. And there were a lot of factors around that, but mostly just we sort of thought, oh, there's no point me going back to work just to, you know, have to leave again soon after. Yeah. And we thought, let's just do it all at once. But I did sort of reach out to a couple of people I knew that had two under two, and they were like, yeah, it's mad, but you know, that's really great now. And but yeah, it was definitely risky. And I didn't really have a lot of time to think about that pregnancy either, because I was looking after a baby. So I forgot to check the apps. I forgot to check how, you know, what size fruit she was. But yeah, once again, it was a good pregnancy. I didn't really have that ligament pain because I guess my body hadn't really moved back. So similar pregnancies, no sickness, still had the cramps, still sculling out of the Gaviscon bottle later on. But I think the hardest part about that pregnancy was just looking after a baby and just in the third trimester, chasing after a one-year-old who was sort of just crawling everywhere and kind of learning how to walk. So I was just really tired.
And did you go with a different midwife this time around?
Yes, I did. And she was amazing. I gelled really, really well with her, and she was really kind and caring and nurturing, and that was just what I needed. I really needed someone who was like that the first time around. But because I was also nervous going into this birth after the last, it was just, I was so grateful to have her. But I actually went privately this time as well. And it was actually, like, I had no complications, so there was no real need for me to go privately. And like I said, my midwife was fantastic, but mum, I actually think, experienced some of the trauma being in the room. So she said, I want you to go privately and I'm paying. So it was kind of like her gift to me. And it was really good. I did have double the appointments. So it was a little bit harder there because I was seeing my midwife and then having to go see the specialists. But it was good.
Yeah. Awesome. And did you talk through, I guess, how you felt about your previous birth with both of your care providers?
And like they kind of had their mouths open as I was sort of telling the story, just saying like, you know, you shouldn't have been treated like that. Just repeating like some of the language that was used, I guess, in your most vulnerable moments. They were pretty surprised to hear that. And I just remember the specialist who I was seeing saying, this is not going to be your birth story this time around. And I just, I really needed to hear that.
And so that was an obstetrician that you were seeing?
Yes, an obstetrician.
Awesome. Cool. And did you do antenatal classes again this time around, or what were your sort of thoughts around birth education?
Oh, no. I was like, oh, no. Ain't nobody got time for that. I sort of remembered everything really, and it's, you know, it was pretty fresh in my mind with Harry still being so young, and so we didn't do any of that again.
Yeah, cool. And did you work with your obstetrician and midwife on a birth plan? So did you have sort of thoughts on how you wanted it to go this time around based on your previous experience, or what were your thoughts there?
Yeah, so I did mention that for the first time I wanted to have a pull birth, and I actually think it was around then that it finally hit me that I actually never had that. I was like, oh, that never happened.
Yeah.
Because I never really processed that. But because they thought she was going to be quite a large baby, and they were a little bit worried about her shoulders. They sort of mentioned shoulder dystocia a few times, which freaked me out. Mm. I sort of said, look, I might opt for an epidural, because they said that there could be an emergency C-section. Like, they were really good in how they explained it. There was no scaremongering, but me being me, I was sort of like, ah. Mm. And I did end up going and speaking to someone about the option of a C-section, a specialist, and then I was like, actually, no, that's not for me. Just with the because obviously, like, I probably at that stage could have birthed naturally anyway. Mm. And I thought the recovery period would just be too much for me with a 1-year-old.
Yeah.
So I was like, no, we won't do that. I'll give this a go. But I sort of said to them, I'd like to have the option of an epidural, because if you do have to do something, at least I don't have to like freak out about
yeah
or whatever. And so the pool, I guess, was kind of out because we were talking about an epidural.
Yeah.
But yeah, different experience, that's for sure.
Yeah, cool. And do you want to take us through your labour sort of starting this time? So how far along were you, and what was the start of your labour like?
It was quite similar. She wasn't posterior, so that was good. So I didn't find the contractions I felt them more manageable while I was at home. And at the beginning it was pretty chilled. Like, we just put on a playlist, hung out on the couch. I had my mum over a bit later on as they sort of increased a bit, and my grandparents as well, because they had to look after Harry.
Yeah.
So everyone was hanging out. And we were timing them. I sort of think I must have missed a few, because when my midwife came over to examine me, I think it was about 1 a.m, and I was, I think, 5 centimetres at that stage. And she said, well, considering your first birth was really quick, it's up to you. You can stay for a bit longer, but just sort of be mindful. I'm like, no, let's get in there. And like the second I got into the car, they started to really ramp up. And so it was a lot faster than my first.
Yeah. And do you want to take us through the rest of your experience and then into your birth story?
Yeah, sure. So when we got there, my midwife, so she was already there, and the specialist generally gets there right before the birth, so she wasn't there at that stage. And it was just, it was totally different. Like, you know, I was being listened to the whole time. I just jumped up on the bed pretty much straight away. And I was sort of just sitting there and breathing through the contractions. They were getting really full on at that stage. The lights were all dim. It was just a lot more calm.
Yeah.
And I think I was having the gas at that point. And then I ended up opting for the epidural, and I can't remember how far along I was. I can't remember, but it was getting pretty close, and I'm so glad I did. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Like, I know there's risks and stuff, but, you know, I was fine, and it was amazing. And so then the obstetrician arrived, and I started pushing like pretty quickly, and I could still feel everything I was doing, which was really good. But then at one stage, her heart rate dropped again, just like what happened with Harry, and she got stuck. And my obstetrician was like, okay, we need to get her out really quickly. And she went to grab the forceps, and I think because I was in such a calm state of mind, obviously with the epidural, like, you're going to be pretty calm.
Mm.
I just said, like, I just felt like I could do it. And I said, can you please not use those? Can I please just try and do this?
Mm.
So what she did is, this is probably going to sound a bit graphic, I couldn't feel it, so it's all good. She got her hands in there and like basically stretched me, because I just, she wasn't coming out.
Yeah.
And after she did that, I pushed her out, and she was fine. So no tears, nothing. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. And totally different experience to your first, right? Just with like the feeling in the hospital and the language that was used and the way that you were explained things and the option to use your voice and say, no, I want to give this a try. Like, did you sort of know that feeling straight away that you'd had a different experience?
100% different. Yeah. And it would have been different with the epidural or not. Like I was yes. being listened to the whole yeah. way through. And I just felt like I had amazing support, amazing care. And because I was being listened to and I guess encouraged mm. in how I was feeling and how I was progressing, I felt confident. It was, yeah, totally different. And it really changed how I felt about birth.
Yeah. Yeah. And so yeah. you didn't need any stitches this time, or you did?
No stitches.
Yeah. Awesome. No. And how long did you stay in hospital for?
I think I was out sometime that day and I just went to another hospital for 3 days again. It was a different one to the first time.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Cool. And how did you find going home with Holly? And obviously you've already got Harry at home. So what was I guess that initial experience, like I can't even imagine the juggle with Jai being even 18 months old. I can't imagine it. So how did you find, those initial first few weeks and adjusting to being a mum of two and also just looking after this little newborn and looking after yourself?
It was full on, but I had a lot of support. I was really lucky to have that family support. I wasn't like alone for the first 4 weeks. Yeah. So that was good. But one thing I didn't prepare for, like when I was in hospital, I really missed Harry. And I remember us FaceTiming and I just cried. And it was like, it was beautiful watching them meet in the hospital for the first time. But he was so young, like he was all hands and head. And, you know, it was just, it was like having two babies.
Yeah.
But it kind of messed with my head a little bit because I'm like, which baby needs me more right now? Yeah. And I'd start to feel a bit torn. So I did experience a bit of guilt there. But like watching them bond over the weeks and months, like nothing was more special than that.
Yeah.
I didn't have any issues with breastfeeding this time.
Yeah.
It wasn't like latched her on and it was perfect. It took about 5 weeks for us to get into a good rhythm, but there was no great pain there. I was really, it was such a different experience for me. Like it was so healing. It was so amazing being able to breastfeed her. And we did until she was, 14 months actually. So totally different.
Yeah. Amazing. It sounds like Holly's birth and then breastfeeding experience has probably been quite healing and just, totally different, right?
Yeah, very much so. I was actually the most nervous about having to try breastfeed again. And part of me thought, oh, maybe you just shouldn't. But I wanted to, just because it was something I wanted to be able to do for her.
Yes.
And I would still feel guilty sometimes feeding her, and then, I'd feel bad for Harry, and he's fine. He is so healthy. Our bond is amazing. There is nothing wrong with him.
Yeah.
It was nice to be able to do it, and also just not having to faff about with bottles. Like it was easier actually for me to breastfeed.
Yeah. Awesome. And how did you find your like physical recovery from this birth? Were you sort of feeling okay and recovered after a couple of weeks, or what was your experience like this time?
I think much the same. I was very lucky with my recovery after both births. I don't feel like there was any trauma there physically at all.
Awesome.
It was all fine.
Cool. Yeah, nice. And how did things progress between Harry and Holly? And like you said, their bond has been, really beautiful to watch grow. So how did you find over the sort of next few months and being a mum to two and juggling that and also watching them grow together?
Well, it was a really big juggle, obviously, having them close in age. Especially as Harry was just learning how to walk, I sort of felt guilty that I wasn't able to give him the time that I gave him before.
Yeah.
But like, as I said, I had a lot of family support. Even Drew's mum came over from Melbourne to help. And it was hard when that help stopped and I was alone and I was like, oh my God, now what?
Yeah.
What a big shock to the system.
Yeah.
But I found my stride. It did take me a long time to actually venture out alone with the two of them. But then, that dynamic became our new norm.
Yeah.
And watching them grow up so close in age is really cool because they're kind of into the same things and, and I can take them to the same types of playgrounds. I don't know. Like I just sort of found that with them being so close in age, it was easy in some ways.
Yeah.
I think no matter what age gap you have, you're going to have challenges.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. The nights actually, that was, yeah, we had two screaming babies still all night. We just did not have good sleepers.
Yeah. Were they in separate rooms? Like, did they sleep in different rooms?
Yeah, Harry was in his own room at that point, yeah. But I think I had Holly in our room till she was about 4 months old.
Yeah.
But she was in her own, like, bassinet or cot or whatever. But, yeah, I don't know, like, the house that we were in at the time was also a lot smaller, so their rooms were really close, and if one of them kicked off, then the other would kick off. So, I mean, like, yeah. Carol and I were just chips in the night, yo-yos yeah. between rooms, and it felt like that for, well, 2 years, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was hard. Like, the nights were really hard. You never just looked forward to sleep ever.
Yeah.
But, you know, we got through it, and things are so much easier now. So you get through it.
Yeah, yeah. And is there anything else that you feel like we haven't covered or you want to include in your story before we wrap up?
No, I think I've covered everything. I guess, like, the biggest thing is that, you know, don't let your first experience dictate your next one. Like, all births and even postpartum journeys are so different. Mm-hmm. Remember to advocate for yourself and your baby. Sometimes you need to talk a little louder. But it can really make all the difference for you as you enter that fourth trimester. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Cool. Well, thank you so much, Jess, for coming on the podcast and sharing your stories with us. I know that, like you said, you don't find it, you know, super easy to talk about Harry's birth, but I think you did a really good job, and it's nice to hear that you had, like, a really healing experience with Holly not long after. So just really grateful that you are willing to share with us today.
Thank you. It was actually really good to talk about it.
Thanks so much for listening to this week's episode of Kiwi Birth Tales. I hope you have enjoyed it, and I will speak to you again next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.